This is now the new unfamiliar test related to Lit 104, Oil of Avatar. It is part 2 that I shall dictate at 180 words per minute. I trust you have reviewed all the preview words listed in the introduction, are writing this real time, and are going to assess your progress by listening to the recording. Let's begin. Environmentalists argue that Dilbit, as the mixture is called, is more corrosive to pipelines than conventional crude, thereby increasing the likelihood of a land-based spill. Northern Gateway says that is not the case, that pipelines have been carrying Dilbit from Alberta for 30 years, and the frequency of spills is no greater than conventional oil pipelines. Apparently, there appears to be no scientific consensus on the behavior of diluted bitumen in a real-life spill situation. Nevertheless, the Premier of British Columbia has put 5 conditions on the proposed pipeline from Fort McMurray to the West Coast. 1. It must meet all environmental approvals. 2. It must provide the best possible marine spill protection for the coast. 3. It must provide enhanced spill cleanup systems along the pipeline route. 4. It must meet First Nations concerns. And 5. It must give BC a share of the economic benefits for taking all the environmental risks. Of course, we can only guess what would happen if there was a major natural catastrophe, such as an earthquake or a tanker accident offshore. The Northern Gateway is committed to a capacity to contain 36,000 cubic meters or 32,000 tons of oil within 10 days of a spill. Canadian regulations require a capacity of 10,000 tons. That still seems like a large amount, right? But it is probably small potatoes compared to what would happen if an oil tanker ruptured off the West Coast, or as what happened in the offshore drilling disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, causing more than $40 billion in damage. The volume of oil produced by the oil sands on a daily basis is staggering. In the recent past, I wrote 2 letters to the editor of the Edmonton Journal that actually were published. The first letter relates to fracking, a process typically used in horizontal drilling designed to fracture rock formations in order to boost oil or natural gas production. The letter may not seem terribly relevant to this discussion, but there is a principle contained therein that relates to what I consider to be our most precious natural resource, water, and the tremendous volume of water used in the fracking process. The letter was headed by the journal as, "Fracking debate comes home to roost." Quote, "Marketing is indeed an art. When you buy groceries, the cost of produce is boldly listed in the smaller amount of pounds to make it appear more affordable. Delicatessen items are promoted per 100 grams, so it seems like you're getting more for your money. Oil companies love the smaller unit of liters when it comes to selling gasoline, but they are quick to use the extremely large measure of cubic meters for water used in hydraulic fracking. Let's be clear. A cubic meter contains 1,000 liters. If up to 15,000 cubic meters of water are used per hole per day times 150 stimulations or days, that equals 2,250,000,000 liters. Nice sell job for the free water they force over a kilometer underground with enough pressure to fracture rock formations, but I'm not buying." End quote. So how does this relate to the oil sands? Presently, there is over 1.5 million barrels of oil produced from the tar sands per day. That's every day of the year, 365 days. One barrel of oil contains 43 U.S. gallons, or 159 liters. If you multiply 1.5 million barrels by the number of gallons or liters contained in each, the respective totals are well over 64 million gallons or 238 million liters per day. Here's the kicker. For every barrel of oil produced from the oil sands, approximately 4 barrels of water is needed to separate the oil from the sand. That's 6 million barrels of water per day at our present production rate. This fresh water comes from the Athabasca River, and after the separation process, this dirty water, called effluent, that has become saturated with heavy metals and contaminants such as PAH, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, as well as oil residue, runs into what is referred to as holding ponds or tailings ponds, where it is hoped the residue and pollutants will eventually settle to the bottom and somehow magically disappear. Well, the term pond is a clever misnomer, because I'll bet when you think of a pond, you imagine something the size of a small slough or a dugout. At the largest, maybe it is something the size of an Olympic swimming pool. Wrong. Here is a list of some interesting facts about tailings and the ponds north of Fort McMurray that I found on the internet. Quote, 1. Tailings are stored indefinitely in open lakes that cover an area approximately 50% larger than the city of Vancouver. 2. Tailings lakes increase in volume at a rate that would fill the Toronto Sky Dome on a daily basis. 3. There are currently more than 170 square kilometers of tailings ponds in Alberta. Even when tailings ponds covered 50 square kilometers, they were big enough to be seen from space. 4. Tailings lakes seep. The exact amount of seepage is either not known or has not been made public. 5. Tailings are a waste byproduct from the oil sands extraction processes used in the mining operations. Tailings consist of a mix of water, sand, silt, clay, contaminants, and unrecovered hydrocarbons, and are toxic. Tailings management remains one of the most difficult environmental challenges for the oil sands mining sector, end quote. So forget about the global carbon emissions from old and inefficient coal-fired power plants. Never mind that an environmental group, Greenpeace, ranks coal as a bigger climate change culprit than the oil sands. It is giant dump trucks, moonscapes, and ponds filled with industrial muck at Fort McMurray that have fueled the public's imagination. A lack of government regulation may be causing species extinction and destruction of habitat at a rate never seen in this province. And there you have the second test.